Hi, I'm Yusuf Zine. My latest TVO Today podcast is on how a Canadian ends up in a Chinese prison and if he's even alive. Listen and subscribe to Extradition. Available now, wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome, everyone, to the On Poly podcast. I'm Steve Paikin.
And I'm John Michael McGrath.
We're on every weekday during this 43rd Ontario election campaign. Today on the pod, it's E-Day. After 29 days of campaigning, it's all over but the shouting and the voting. It's Thursday, June 2nd, 2022, so let's get to it. Well, John Michael, let's just start with a bit of fun, shall we? What is the one word you would use to describe this election?
Concluding. And if you were to spot me another word, I would say mercifully concluding.
Well, I'm going to take the exact opposite approach here. I'm going to use the word scrumtralescent. Because we're on Zoom, I can also see you, and I see you're thinking, what the heck does that mean? That is, of course, a made-up word from some Saturday Night Live sketch from 100 years ago. But I know it's very fashionable nowadays to say that this is a horribly boring and awful election campaign. And in some respects, it was. It was not the most interesting story, I'll grant you that. But I'm just kind of old-fashioned and corny enough to be quite inspired, as I was when I went to vote this morning, to see so many people out and doing their thing, you know, participating in the democratic process. I really dig that.
I also voted this morning, and I didn't have a perfect experience, let me put it that way, basically a guy in front of me, he cut in front of a woman in line, and when she like said, you know, hey, what are you doing? He was like, I have to be somewhere. It was not a great, graceful, you know.
That's crazy. Canadians don't
moment.
Cut the line. They're not supposed to cut the line.
Yeah. No, it was not great. But aside from that, I think this was the longest it has taken me to vote in many, many cycles, and it was maybe all of 25 minutes. I really do marvel at the work that Elections Ontario does to pull these elections off. There are always hitches. There are always sometimes errors and sometimes consequential ones, and I don't want to minimize those. But as a system, I am always just blown away at how well Canadian elections are run as a rule.
Well, let's remember that it takes 55,000 people to come forward in the last couple of months to run an election. They fan out all over the province of Ontario, 124 different ridings. And you're quite right, something usually screws up somewhere. And that did happen at my polling station in Midtown Toronto in the riding of Toronto St. Paul's. Somebody showed up wearing, and they're told not to do this. They are told explicitly not to do this. Don't show up wearing red or blue or green or orange. And somebody did. So they had to send them home. And they did send them home. And that meant that they were down one polling captain at that station. And as a result, I and everybody else, of course, in line had to wait for more than an hour to vote. And I'll tell you what, I also thought this was inspiring. Nobody complained. Everybody was happy, not happy. Everybody was content to wait a little extra longer if they had to do their democratic duty. And I found that a nice way to wrap up this campaign.
Yeah, I was reminded of the last time I was in a big long lineup for a civic purpose, which was when I and other people were getting their second doses. And sometimes even something as simple as waiting in line is a civic act.
Yeah, right on. All right. Without further ado, I know that for many Ontarians, this day couldn't come soon enough, right?
Right. The biggest stories of most campaigns are, fascinating or ambitious new policy announcements, star candidates attracted to join a party and its campaign, the ups and downs of the party's popularity. Sometimes you get really dramatic shifts in polling. And not this time. Basically static polling, as close to four flat lines on a chart as you could ask for, really. Sometimes when you see a bunch of lines all moving in the same direction on a chart, we talk about snakes in a tube all moving in the same way. In this case, I think the snakes might be dead. there is a sense of exhaustion about politics from a lot of voters. People have been maybe politicized against their will over the last 2 years. You know, lots of people, you know, indulge in the luxury of not thinking about politics outside of election campaigns. And a lot of people haven't had that luxury for the last 2 years. People have had to pay attention to Doug Ford and the Progressive Conservative Party in government and what they were doing as a pandemic response. So I think for a lot of people, this election was sort of grim, bitter work, perhaps, get to the finish line, which is where we are now. And, you know, maybe people will crack open a beer when they watch the results come in tonight. But I'm not sure anybody was really enthusiastic about, you know, seeing what would happen in this campaign.
Right. But the leaders all did set a good example by voting themselves today. And one presumes they all voted for themselves, which you can't. I mean, it sounds funny to say that, but sometimes they can't all do that, right? Sometimes
yes.
The leaders don't actually live in the constituencies that they represent. But that was not the case this time. Take us through it.
Progressive Conservative leader Doug Ford voted this morning at a local high school in Etobicoke North. This is a riding he won by 10,000 votes 4 years ago. He brought his wife Carla with him. NDP leader Andrew Horvath voted at the Melrose United Church in Hamilton Center, which, again, the riding she won by 18,000 votes 4 years ago. Steve, as you and I both know, that church is near Tim Hortons Field, where the Hamilton Tiger Cats play.
Oski wee wee.
Liberal leader Stephen Del Duca voted at Woodbridge Pool and Memorial Arena in Woodbridge. 4 years ago, he lost in the riding of Vaughan Woodbridge by 8,000 votes to Michael Tobolo. And tonight, that rematch is on, and it's going to be close. And Mike Schreiner of the Green Party voted at Guelph City Hall. He won his riding of Guelph 4 years ago by 15,000 votes.
Well, clearly three of the four leaders seem poised to win personal re-election in their ridings. The big wild card, as you indicated, is the Del Duca-Tibolo showdown in York Region. And, well, I generally don't like getting too hypothetical about these things, but we know that the parties are, so let's us do it now, too. Take us through the possible permutations here. If Del Duca wins his seat, then what? If Tibolo wins his seat, then what?
Well, you carefully and professionally do not engage in these speculations. I have written something for TVO.org this week that does engage in these speculations because I'm not as professional as you are. But if Del Duca wins his seat, he defeats a one-term cabinet minister, which is no small feat. And he returns to the legislature in the riding he once served from 2012 to 2018. I mean, it was a slightly different riding. It got carved up to make Vaughan Woodbridge because of rapid growth in the 905. If Del Duca loses, things get trickier. If the Liberals have a really good night in a seat count and he still loses his seat, he probably remains as leader. In particular, I would say if the Liberals manage to pick up some seats outside of the 905, you know, that we've talked about some of the seats that they would really like to pick up in, like London North Centre, as a for example. You know, if he can show that the Liberal Party has a renewed strength, not just in the core of the GTA, but, you know, that he can build the support of the party outside of that traditional heartland for the Liberals, I think he's probably more secure. So if he has that good night where the Liberals, do elect a passel of new MPPs and, you know, maybe it's 25 or more seats in the legislature, he can probably ask one of those newly elected Liberals, as regrettable as it will be, a Liberal who, you know, represents a safe riding, will be asked to step aside, resign just basically as quickly as they got elected. And then they will call a by-election and Stephen Del Duca will run in that hopefully safe Liberal seat and he will be able to lead the party from the legislature, something he hasn't been able to do for the last 2 years. But if the Liberals come in third, as some pollsters have projected, if they are still the third party in the legislature, and it may occur that they get more votes than the NDP but fewer seats, then that would signal both. I mean, it would just be intrinsically disappointing for the Liberals to be the third party still. It would also signal that they did not have a very good night, that outside of their core constituencies in Ottawa and Toronto, they really didn't grow the party's brand very much. Del Duca may not have a lot of people to choose from in terms of asking somebody to step aside so that he can run. And he will also just face this really obvious question of, you said you were going to bring us back into power, right? When Del Duca was running for the leadership, he said, I think his exact words were, we can't afford to take two terms to defeat Doug Ford. And if, in fact, he does lose the seat and the Liberals are still the third party in the legislature, forget everybody else's standards for what Del Duca's performance should have been. By the standards that Del Duca set for himself, that would be a failure. And he would face some very tough questions from the party about whether he should stay on.
I can imagine some people listening to this right now are thinking and scratching their heads saying, wait a second, if he comes second in the votes, how can he come third in the seats? And the answer, of course, is because our first-past-the-post system does produce some quirky results. And it's happened twice to the Liberals in the past, in 1975 and 1948, where they actually came second in the total vote count, but third in the total seat count. And that's because their vote is not as efficient as the NDP vote is. In 1975, the then-leader Robert Nixon got almost the same votes as Bill Davis, only 2 points behind. And I think he was 4 points up on the NDP led by Stephen Lewis. And yet it was Lewis's NDP that came second in the seat count. And what did that mean? Just the scenario you described. Robert Nixon felt an obligation to resign because he did not defeat Mr. Davis after two attempts at it. And therefore, that was the end of him in terms of his leadership at that moment. So, yeah, some quirky seat splits and you can get the second highest vote total, but the third highest seat total. It's happened twice before.
And vote efficiency is one of these things that, increasingly in Canadian politics, people talk about a lot. But it's worth emphasizing that, vote efficiency is not something that is carved in stone, that is intrinsic to a party. The Ontario Liberals are, in fact, a perfect example of this. As recently as 2014, just, two elections ago, they had an incredibly efficient vote distribution, and Kathleen Wynne won a majority with 37%, which was, a relatively small threshold to win that many seats. Of course, by 2018, that had evaporated, and now in 2022, you can see the party still struggling against parties, the Tories and the New Democrats, who currently have a much more efficient vote distribution than the Liberals.
Indeed. All right. Let's ask, and I will ask this next question, fully cognizant of the fact that on the agenda last night, Senator Frances Lankin, who was part of our discussion, she described this campaign as, quote, lackluster, boring, and frustrating. And she defended her position well on that. Those are kind of tough criticisms, but she defended them well. Having said that, were there any high watermarks for you over the last 29 days?
I would say the first 2 weeks or so were actually a really good example of what a political campaign can be, what a contest can be. I thought, roughly speaking, the period from the start of the writ period to the debate, this was a period in time with, lots of new announcements, lots of policy discussion, lots of, I thought, substantive debate, including a Northern debate and a leaders debate, televised here from TVO. I don't know if that's how I'll feel a few weeks from now with a bit of distance between now and then, but I definitely felt like the early period of the campaign was, it was a lot of fun to cover, and I thought there was a lot of energy, at least for those first 2 weeks. How about you, Steve?
Well, I would agree with what you said, and I think there was early energy because the two opposition parties at that point still thought they could move the vote. And 2 weeks in, I think they came to the grim realization that they could bang their head against the wall all they wanted, and the vote was probably not going to move. I, at the risk of sounding self-indulgent here, because I was one of the co-moderators, I liked the leaders' debate. I thought the leaders performed well in the leaders' debate. I thought the debate didn't have the kind of acrimonious showboating and everybody screaming at each other all at once. Yes, a little bit, but not nearly as much as the last two federal debates, which were just complete you-know-what shows. So, I was encouraged that the leaders' debate, that all the leaders managed to put a good foot forward. And I also am, let's face it, I'm going to remember this election campaign years from now as the one where two leaders were taken off the campaign trail in the middle of the campaign because they both came down with the coronavirus. That's historic. So we will always remember that. Now, how about for you? Any low points that you would say like to forget?
Based on my answer to the previous question, I guess you could say I didn't love the period that followed the debate nearly as much as the weeks that preceded it. It really did start to feel like a slog to me, especially in this last week. You mentioned the frustration that the opposition parties have started to feel, and I think that's become really visible, including, some of the leaders getting maybe chippy with their answers to questions from people like us about, what do you think about losing? Because that's what it looks like it's going to be. And I understand them being chippy about it because it's not a fun question to answer. And it's certainly not a fun question to answer for the, 12th or 13th or 14th time, which they've had to do. For the most part, though, I would say there wasn't any part of the campaign that I truly hated, though, of course, there has been some unpleasantness that we've talked about on this podcast, like when citizen journalist Karima Saad was arrested at a PC rally in Hamilton. Stuff like that, I think it was unnecessary. I think we've discussed that, and I don't think anybody would say it's an example of how you want an election to unfold in Ontario. How about you, Steve? Any low points?
Well, I would just say to the listeners, we didn't compare notes before we did this podcast. So I will once again sign on to what you just said, having heard it only now for the first time. I would add one other thing, and that is, and this is, let me stress, this is not a partisan comment. I didn't like it in 1980 when Pierre Trudeau ran a peekaboo campaign and basically had the electorate sleepwalking through the whole election campaign because he was high in the polls and he didn't want to take any risks. And as a result, he did a peekaboo thing and basically did very few public events and gave no interviews and that kind of thing. I didn't like it 42 years ago. And I didn't like it this time when essentially the progressive conservatives gave forth the order that the vast majority of their candidates were not to participate in local all candidates debates, that the premier would give no interviews at all during the course of the campaign. And the premier has not had a media availability since Monday of this week. He's essentially gone into, it's a strange thing to say he's gone into hiding, given that he did a big public rally last night. But again, it was a private rally. You had to register and be allowed into it. So it was for Tory members only. So I regret that stuff because I well remember the days when you'd be considered a chicken if you didn't show up for these kinds of all candidates events, and it would be considered embarrassing for you not to show up to these things. Most Tory candidates didn't, and I'm sorry that that's happened because I think everybody should be participating in the democratic process to the greatest extent that they can. So I find that unfortunate. I get the strategy behind it, but I find it very unfortunate.
I will say, in addition to this, and again, not to make this a Steve and John Michael mutual admiration society moment, but of course I co-sign your remarks there. And the thing is that for many of these candidates, do the math, right? The Tories had a majority in the last legislature. This is not the first time around for most of the Tory candidates, and as much as anybody can have a bozo eruption in theory, I don't think it would have hurt them nearly as badly as they seem to think it might have. I think they would have been better served to show up. It's supposed to be an adversarial process. It is, we believe, if you believe in representative democracy, it is that we are best served when the argument is clear and forthright and made publicly, and you can't do that if people don't show up.
Yeah, I remember the 1999 election is very much, or was very much, like the one we're going through right now. The Progressive Conservatives started the campaign at about 45.5%. They ended the campaign at 45.5%. And Mike Harris's candidate showed up for all candidates' meetings, and the premier himself, Mike Harris, gave us an interview. So, I think there's no excuse for it, but, these decisions are made by greater minds than mine. Now, we are going to be obviously providing coverage to the people of Ontario tonight on TVO and, of course, live streamed on our Twitter and Facebook pages and on our website, tvo.org. And I guess we should share right now some of the things that we're going to be watching for tonight, like, for example, the big important ridings, which will tell the bigger stories. What are you watching for?
So, not to put too fine a point on it, but the polls are all suggesting that this is going to be a very good night for the Progressive Conservatives. I am going to be looking, at least early on, at some of those marginal ridings, let's say, that they've been gunning for, places that they frankly might not win, but that if they have a really strong performance early on in the night, or if they do in fact win, I'm thinking of places like Don Valley West, where Mark Saunders, the former Toronto police chief, is running, or Beaches East York, where the Tories are running Angela Kennedy. That is a riding that has historically been NDP almost exclusively for several decades now, although it was held by a Liberal in 2014. Those kinds of ridings, I think, are going to give us an indication of just how good a night it's going to be for the Progressive Conservatives. I will also, of course, be curious to see if the Greens can close the deal in Parry Sound, Muskoka. We have talked a lot about that riding on this podcast. And I think out of curiosity, I am going to be watching Thunder Bay Superior North to see who succeeds Liberal Michael Gravel there. We talked about Gravel early in the campaign. He had to drop out of the race early on due to health concerns. He had represented that riding for over 20 years. So I will be curious to see whether the Liberals manage to hold that seat or potentially whether they get swept out of their last northern riding. How about you, Steve?
Well, I look for themes as much as I look at specific ridings. And by way of example, I'm going to be watching to see how much of a comeback the Liberals can make. And that means watching ridings such as Toronto Center, Toronto St. Paul's, University Rosedale, Spadina Fort York, Ottawa West Nepean, Thunder Bay Atikokan, the other Thunder Bay riding, which the NDP only won by, I think it was about 89 votes last time.
Yeah, it was a real squeaker.
Yeah, these are areas of the province which traditionally have voted Liberal, but because of the Liberal collapse 4 years ago, they went NDP. Can the NDP keep those seats, having spent 4 years making connections with people in the riding? Or will they, so to speak, revert back to form? That's one thing I'll be looking for. I'm also going to be fascinated to see whether the Tories can take seats away from, not the Liberals, but the NDP, which you wouldn't think would happen. But with the big endorsements from many private sector construction unions that may happen, especially in southwestern Ontario, so I'm watching ridings such as Essex, which the NDP won by 10,000 votes two elections ago and barely squeaked by last time, just by a couple of thousand votes. And some of the Windsor ridings, like Windsor-Tecumseh, where there's no former sitting member for the NDP running, and so perhaps the Tories have a shot at that one for the first time in 60 years. I'll be watching that as well. Now, one thing we should keep in mind today, 90% of the people who have their names on a ballot, who run for office, they lose. But they run anyway because they've got something to say and they want to contribute to our democracy. So I just want to take my hat off to those who had the guts to put their names on a ballot today and thank them for doing their bit for democracy. I know that sounds corny, but I mean it.
No, and it's worth saying, and it's also, I think, worth adding that, you know, in a time of deep polarization and real acrimony on social media. I think something I've said on this podcast before, in politics, you can be rivals without being enemies. And I think that is something that we should all internalize as citizens, that, look, lots of people are not going to be happy about the election results tonight, no matter how it shakes out. And part of democracy is, for lack of a better word, you know, going home, maybe having a cry, drinking a beer or whatever else you need to get, you know, to sleep the night and then wake up the next morning and go back to work and you get another shot in 4 years. And I think it's important to be involved. And I think the stakes of elections are incredibly important. And it's really, but you need to balance the importance of the election with the larger importance of us all needing to be able to live with each other in a free and democratic society.
Hear, hear. Well said. And that is the On Poly podcast for Election Day, June 2nd, 2022. We are back with our final daily episode tomorrow, where we will have all the goings-on and analysis from election night. JMM, one last time, I'll say it, we'll see you on the hustings.
We'll talk to you tomorrow, Steve.